Hello, and welcome to You've Got Time, an Orange is the New Black podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Erin Quayle, and this week we discussed episode 10 of season 4 of Orange is the New Black, entitled Bunny Skull, Bunny Skull. We're in the home stretch. This episode addresses a lot of issues such as trauma, the threat of recidivism, obviously issues when Alita gets out of jail, which, there's a lot. We talk a lot about that here and so much more. The episode's, setting up for some pretty serious the last three episodes of the season, which are pretty serious episodes. And I was joined this week by Veronique Hobecki, who is the associate editor at mental health website Resources to Recover. And she'll tell you a little bit about herself and the program she works for on the episode, but it's a wonderful resource for people struggling with mental health issues, or for friends or family who have someone that's struggling from a mental health issue, or just someone who wants to learn a little bit more about various mental health disorders and issues and all of the things that kind of come with that. So I highly recommend that you visit their website. Veronique talks about it a little on the episode, but I believe the website is rtor.org. And next week, we're actually going to have an interview with someone who works for a agency that's associated with Resources to Recover, which is Laurel House. And Laurel House services a lot of schizophrenic individuals in the Stamford, Connecticut area. And we'll be talking to an expert on schizophrenia next week in a bonus episode leading up to the 11th episode of Orange is the New Black, which is very mental health focused. So we'll get a little more information on that in the next few weeks. So, if you've watched the episodes, you know that we're reaching kind of the unrelenting emotional climax, and the next three episodes leading up to the finale are, they're serious, they're gut punches, and we really want you to join us in the discussion of those episodes as they kind of, bring everything from season 4 together in a very, very great way. And there's a lot to talk about in those episodes. So we want you to join us. In addition to our weekly live tweet of an episode, this Monday, August 29th, we're going to be live tweeting the 11th episode, which also has Crazy Eyes flashback in it, and deals a lot with mental health, like I said before. We're going to be tweeting that on Monday, August 29th at 9 o'clock Eastern, and 9 o'clock PM Eastern Standard Time, on You've Got Time Pod, at You've Got Time Pod on Twitter. We're also on all the other social media sites as well. And we're working on setting up ways for Orange is the New Black fans to sort of have a conversation with us and a back and forth about that huge moment that happens in episode 12. We don't really want to ruin anything here, just in case people haven't seen it yet. But if you've seen it already, you know. If not, you will. And we want opinions from everyone, to kind of put them into our episode for that specific moment of time in season 4 of Orange is the New Black. So we'll mention ways to contact us on the next episode. We're hoping to maybe set up a voicemail or try to maybe even set up conversations with people that are fans of the show and the podcast, and try to get all sorts of different angles for that specific moment, because it was such a big moment, not only for Orange is the New Black, but also for TV and socially as well. So we'll mention it on the next episode, and also post it on all of our socials once we kind of figure out, how to do that. But you can always reach us on our, like I said, on our Twitter page at You've Got Time Pod, also on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/ You've Got Time Podcast, and on Gmail at You've Got Time Podcast at gmail.com. So I hope you enjoy this conversation, and we hope to hear from you guys throughout the week, and hope you're having a great week as well. So thanks so much. Enjoy the talk. So we're here today to talk about episode 10 of Orange is the New Black. But before we kind of jump into that, thank you so much for being here. I have Veronique here today from Resources to Recover. And I just wanted to kind of hear a little bit about what Resources to Recover does, and maybe give the listening audience a little bit more of an idea about what your agency provides the public in Stamford, Connecticut.
Great, and thanks for having me. So I work for Resources to Recover as the associate editor, and it's a website that can be found at rtor.org. It is a free service of Laurel House in Stamford, Connecticut, but the website serves the whole nation. The purpose of the website is to provide family members help getting the right resources for their loved ones who are affected by mental health concerns. Laurel House serves Stamford and the Fairfield County area with various services for people affected by mental illness.
Yeah, it's great. It's I know that when I worked in Stamford, we had a couple overlapping clients. I worked at a substance abuse clinic, and they would always really talk about it with a lot of like reverence and happiness, because it was a community for them to be in where, you know, there wasn't really a lot of stigma attached to the mental health. They were just kind of people coming together to kind of deal with their issues and, you know, live productive lives in this community. I think Laurel House is called a clubhouse, I guess.
We've kind of moved away from the clubhouse model, but we still have a lot of community outreach. We have workshops and programs that members of the community can come into, and the purpose is to sort of work with the community and the participants so that they can live a more enriched life with the community. So it's kind of a back and forth between giving people with mental illness, you know, a good place to come, no stigma, as well as making sure they're, you know, living productive lives out in the community.
Yeah, that's great. And like I said, all of the clients that I had that overlapped with the services here just loved it. So
it's great.
I can't say enough good things about it. And it's funny because when you watch, you know, Orange is the New Black and you see these people with mental health issues, you kind of wish there were more services like this around the country.
That provided
things like this for them, because it's hard enough to deal with mental health and the stigma of mental health or mental health in general. If you have a mental health issue, it's hard enough to deal with that on top of the stigma, on top of all of the difficulties that you have. So it's nice to be in a place where you can feel like accepted. Well, all right. So we're going to dive into the episode. This episode is actually about Alita. So Alita doesn't really, I mean, she doesn't have any like severe mental health problems. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure she's got, we'll get into a little bit more about her. She, you know, she's definitely got a little PTSD from her time in prison, but there's a lot of other stuff going on in this episode that we'll get to first, just because Alita will take up a lot of the meat of the conversation. But you know, there's a lot of pieces moving into place for the final three episodes. You know, if you're someone listening to this who for some reason hasn't binged the whole season or watched the last three episodes, there's a lot going on in the last three episodes of the season, and this episode kind of moves a lot of those pieces into place. So first we kind of see Sister Ingalls. It always kind of bothers me that she doesn't have a first name and they call her sister.
That's true. I never noticed that before, but we don't know what her name is.
I know her real name. I actually don't know her first name on the show. I know her last name's Ingalls, but anyway, Sister is trying to get a picture of Sophia in the shoe, and last episode, you know, she slapped Gloria in the face or whatever and got her ticket down to shoe, which was funny because she's such a sweet little nun. But but you know, with her, Caputo ends up kind of doing the right thing. You know, she's got the 10-year-old cell phone stuffed up her her badge, and she, you know, kind of lets it go. So you know, that whole scene, it's so, I don't know, it's just so heartening to see someone like kind of going out of their way for someone else. And I really love that relationship between Sister and Brissette. So, I mean, Caputo ends up giving the phone to Danny at the end, and yay for Danny, I love him. I wish his website was real, because
me too.
I would totally love to go on his website and check out what DannyTalksTruth.com. But yeah, so what do you think about, like, does that redeem Caputo at the end when he gives the phone to Danny, do you think?
I don't think anyone in the show is entirely redeemable, but it definitely scored points for me liking him again, because he sort of fell out of my favor in the last few episodes, with him being more, I guess, administrative than who he used to be. You know, at one side of his mouth, he's telling Sister, like, you made your bed, now you lie in it, which is very, you know, straight, you know, not really, you know, he's not really giving her any leeway. He's not being very human about it. It's just sort of like, oh, in prison, if you bring contraband, you get this punishment. There's no gray area. Mm-hmm. And but then on the outside, he's kind of like, well, maybe I should give it to the press. And then he does. So it's mm-hmm. like he goes one way, he's really by the book. And the other way, he's like, well, I'm going to do what I think is right. So mm-hmm. he's very ambivalent mm-hmm. with his current position. I think that shows with his relationship with Lisa. It's kind of, or not Lisa, Linda.
Mm-hmm. Whatever, who cares?
Whatever. No one really likes her.
Who cares so. About Linda's name?
That he, you know, it's kind of like he loves MCC, but then at the same time he sticks it to MCC mm-hmm. with this photo, so it's kind of like he can't make up his mind.
Yeah, he kind of wants it both ways, really. Mm-hmm. And he's definitely been a character that we've talked a lot about throughout the podcast. And I have mixed feelings about Caputo, yeah. too, because he used to be such a good guy, and he kind of goes out of his way. And he had that, like, kind of befuddling flashback last season where mm-hmm. he's, like, always going out of his way for people. So it's his time now.
Yeah.
But he's in a position where he's responsible for a lot of lives and the safety of a lot of lives. And mm-hmm. he's kind of just letting that fall by the wayside. And, you know, swapping Piscatella for Caputo is not necessarily an equivalent switch.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's interesting because he's kind of, like, he wants to have it both ways. He wants mm-hmm. to be the savior, but he also wants to be still continue to be in the position of power that he's in. But he does, you know, help free Sophia, I guess, we'll see. But he helps be instrumental in, you know, being a voice for her because he knows that what they're doing is wrong. Mm-hmm. And he's trying his best, but it is at the expense of sister, like you said.
Exactly.
Like, she's still in Chew, and she doesn't know when she's going to get out. Yeah. So that's tough.
It kind of reminds me of chess. It's like he traded one pawn for another. It's like, oh, you might have freed Sophia, but then your sister that's might be locked up for an indefinite amount of time, mm-hmm. suffering the same terrible psychological consequences mm-hmm. that we saw Sophia struggle with. So it's almost like he might have done one good thing, but it's countered with another bad thing.
Yeah. And sister is, you know, she's like, when am I going to get out? What's going to happen to me? And he's like, doesn't even give her any answers. Yeah. He just kind of yells at her and leaves.
Exactly.
And then he takes credit for her attempt mm-hmm. to, you know, to do the right thing. So, and I guess sister kind of got what she wanted anyway, because she got Sophia, you know, the voice that she needed to advocate for herself. But at the same time, she's still stuck in the Shoe.
Yeah.
But so aside from, you know, the solitary confinement aspect mm-hmm. of it and the Shoe, you know, obviously we hear a lot of references in this episode to the fact that the Shoe is full. Red mm-hmm. tells one of the guards that the guards are kind of, you know, making Flores, I think, stand up on the table, and the names are hard to keep track of sometimes, but mm-hmm. she's standing up on the table. You know, there's all sorts of these things going on where the guards are kind of running the show, and they're, you know, running the show in a way that's punishment oriented mm-hmm. instead of, you know, instead of like compromising or instead of working with people humans. And we see the fallout from last episode with that horrific, probably one of the most horrific things we've ever mm-hmm. seen on the show where oh my gosh, what's her name? She's the girl who's forced to eat the mouse or the cockroaches.
Maritza?
I think Maritza's her friend. Oh God.
Oh no.
But anyway, it might be Maritza. She's forced to you know, eat the mouse, and she is throwing up at the very beginning mm-hmm. of the episode, and the two other guards are kind of just talking about it, and they're like, oh, it's too early for her to be pregnant. Like, okay, well, A, that's rape.
Yeah.
And so they're talking about it so nonchalantly, and they're both kind of like passing the buck to each other, and mm-hmm. then passing the buck to kind of the system, and then kind of reinforcing that us versus them mentality. Yeah. And that's not, you know, especially somewhere where Laurel House is like all about making partnerships with people who are struggling, like that's not the way to kind of make inroads mm-hmm. with people and make a like a healthy living environment.
Exactly. I think, you know, even if she was just throwing up because she was sick, the fact that they kind of mm-hmm. didn't even acknowledge the fact that she was very ill and was crying, mm-hmm. that, I mean, that could be a health concern for the whole prison if it was mm-hmm. another reason why she was getting sick. So the fact that they just kind of let her walk out, like, whatever.
Yeah.
No big deal. And then the fact that they instantly suspect the other guard of doing something to her, either sexual or not, and mm-hmm. they kind of just decide to protect him instead of her, and that mm-hmm. that's just a divide between the inmates and the guards even further. I believe a few times in this episode The guards and Piscatello refer to them as, like, the Brotherhood. Mm-hmm. And that even in that scene, the male guard tells the female guard, oh, the Brotherhood applies to you, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost comparable to when the white supremacist group kind of rose up in the prison. They were calling mm-hmm. themselves a sister group or mm-hmm. a sisterhood. And so sort of these two grouping powers are really dividing people instead of helping anyone at all.
Mm-hmm. And it's so, like, the us versus them mentality mm-hmm. is just so dangerous. And I think, you know, we see it in the news. We see it with, you know, the racial tensions that we've been seeing. Yeah. We even see it, like, I've been watching the Olympics a lot lately, mm-hmm. and there's that commercial. I don't know why Maya Angelou is shilling for iPhone or Apple or whatever, but have you seen those commercials where she's like, I don't know if it's her poetry or something they wrote for her, but mm-hmm. she's basically like, we are more alike than we are different.
Yeah.
And I think it's so easy to forget that, especially mm-hmm. in, like, the prison, like Litchfield, where there's this hierarchy of power, where, you know, you want the power, or they want to be able to brush things under the rug, so mm-hmm. they don't want to have to deal with, like, the gritty reality of the fact that something horrible just happened to this girl. So
yeah.
they're kind of just, I know I thought about the bystander effect, which is something you learn in, like, Psych 101.
Yeah.
It's like the more people who are involved in something, mm-hmm. you can kind of, and actually that's funny too, because, was that the finale of Seinfeld kind of had the same thing?
Oh,
like
yeah.
they were all like,
like locked up for that. Yeah.
Bystanding
yeah.
and like, yeah, they didn't do anything mm-hmm. about it. And it's kind of the same thing
yeah.
here. Like they're not doing anything about it. Mm-hmm. And it's just super frustrating, especially because McCullough's kind of forged a friendship with her. And it's hard to watch. Her last name is Ramos, now that I remember, but
okay.
I can't remember her. Maria Ramos? I don't know.
It's something with an M. But I know it's an M.
Yes, maybe it's Maritza.
Yeah,
maybe
you're
right. I'm
yeah.
sorry. But yeah, she's so sweet, and she's
exactly.
so, like, well-meaning, and although she is bringing drugs into the prison, but they don't know that, so.
Yeah.
So there's that whole thing going on mm-hmm. with the guards, and it obviously doesn't mean good things for the rest of the prison,
no.
but... You know, in addition to the bystander effect, Piper, I'm not sure if it was intentional or not, but mm-hmm. she kind of made a reference to this study, which is called, like, the Zimbardo study,
yeah.
or known as the
mm-hmm.
Zimbardo study, in Psych, where I think she said something like, it feels like a psych experiment.
Yeah.
And I think she was referring to that study where this guy named Zimbardo, he was a researcher, he sort of took these students at Stanford, I think, and
yeah.
split them into two groups.
Mm-hmm.
Some were prisoners, some were inmates, and it kind of went totally wild. And that's definitely, if you've never taken, like, Psych 101, that's definitely something that
mm-hmm.
I'll be putting on the website for people to check out later, because it's actually an interesting study, which has actually in some ways been disproven, but I think the power dynamic
mm-hmm.
kind of holds true. And that's totally what's happening. Like, Piper tries to stop what she's created, but
mm-hmm.
it's, like, way too little too late.
Exactly. Well, it's really interesting. There's, like, a little fun fact to know about the Zimbardo experiment is that his research assistant actually had to tell him that he needs to stop because he
mm-hmm.
didn't really realize that... It didn't even register because he was playing the warden, that what was happening was unethical
mm-hmm.
and wrong. So it's almost like an outsider had to come in and say, hey, what is going on here? And that kind of, I think, is the role of Danny
mm-hmm.
in this.
Is
that... You know, Caputo's playing the warden, and Danny
mm-hmm.
is sort of the research assistant who is like, hey, what are you doing here? But yeah, that's definitely a thing that's going on, is that there's a very big division between guards and inmates. And also, I noticed in this season, more than any other season, Piscatella or any guard has made references to them being criminals. Like, they
mm-hmm.
he constantly reminds them that they're here for whatever crime they committed, and that when someone else tries to have compassion towards them, he says, you need to remember these ladies are criminals, or
yeah.
you're criminals, you deserve this. He kept, and that, I think, feeds into the kind of Zimbardo effect of what's going on
yeah,
in here.
For sure, because he's separating them more by, like, labeling them
mm-hmm.
as criminals and as, like, lesser than, kind
yeah.
of, because I think that that's how he looks at them. And, you know, we've talked about this on previous podcasts where, like, okay, well, Piscatella has to have some order in the prison. So obviously he has to have some sort of system going on where there's order being imposed. But this is clearly, as the season continues to progress, things are falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And things are not going well at all when you let guards have free rein. And that's the case in a lot of prisons too. Guards aren't trained appropriately. Mm-hmm. Guards, are likely, sexually abused. Mm-hmm. I keep referencing this, the Mother Jones article from Shane Bauer. I'm not sure if you read it. He went in a private prison for 4 months, and he researched every single aspect of his time there. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of statistics about prisoners do get sexually abused. Prisoners sexually abuse other prisoners too, or physically abuse other prisoners. But the guards definitely take liberty and sell drugs to prisoners. Mm-hmm. And the guards are getting paid minimum wage. They're not getting paid, and they're not being screened or trained appropriately. Mm-hmm. So why would they? They're not trained professionals.
Yeah, and even though they hired veterans in this latest season, they didn't even get any training to be the difference between war zone and, mm-hmm. and being a prison guard. And I think some of them might still have, too much of that enemy mindset that mm-hmm. they treat the inmates like they're prisoners of war or other soldiers from a different side, when in reality we're all kind of on the same team, or they're there to, I guess, protect them too. That's part of being a guard, mm-hmm. is to protect them from any possible, if there's violence going on. But as we see, I won't spoil the episode coming up, but they provoke violence, which is, not what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. And actually, kind of talking about the veteran aspect of it, I know that there was a lot of backlash this season, mm-hmm. because the veterans were being painted in kind of an unfair light.
Yeah.
My theory is that they were trying to kind of show the PTSD for these mm-hmm. men and women, or at least two of the men, especially the extremely disturbed one that, made Ramos, made that, eat the mouse or whatever.
Yeah.
But he was painted far more as a villain than he was, any sort of damaged character.
Yeah.
Like we see with Charlie, or we see, and mm-hmm. we'll talk about that. But, he's all bad.
Yeah.
There's no shades mm-hmm. of gray with him. He's a total villain at this point. So, the fact that they're veterans didn't necessarily, I think it's a totally different job.
Exactly. Especially if they didn't get the training. All they did was basically refurbish these houses and then mm-hmm. hired them and said, go live here and go work here. There mm-hmm. was no, I guess, real transfer for them mm-hmm. to really get used to it. And even in the episode after the female guard offers her skills at extraction techniques, which mm-hmm. thankfully Caputo shuts down, but just the fact that was her first response was I can do that, I know mm-hmm. what to do, and they kind of look at him weird that he doesn't want to interrogate his prisoners, and they're like, why not? So
right.
It's the same, no one really helps them make the transition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's, I know, at the very beginning, and I think at some point throughout the season, one of the guards is basically you didn't train us. We got one half round of two truths and a lie or whatever it was that they were playing at the beginning. But really, again, pulling from that Mother Jones article, the DOC, the Department of Corrections, requires at least 3 months of training mm-hmm. for their people that come in to be guards, which still kind of seems not necessarily a lot. For me, as a therapist, I'm not even dealing with, people that have a whole bevy of issues in a microcosm mm-hmm. of a prison. I had to get my master's degree. I had to get licensed.
Yeah.
I had to, it took years. It took, 4 years for an undergrad, 2 years for a master, 2 more years for a licensure. That's 8 years of training to just be a therapist in an outpatient setting.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, you have to, get experience. So 8 years versus 3 months, and 3 months to cover a lot of other things, in addition to, just mental health. There's also medical, there's prison riots, there's all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, there's the self-defense aspect. There's mm-hmm. a lot. And I also think that, and also a lot of these jobs, in military jobs, police jobs, that they don't get enough, I guess, training about how to deal with their emotional health, is that
mm-hmm.
some of the things that they're going to see are going to be violent and possibly disturb mm-hmm. their psyche. They might actually, form an attachment, either a positive attachment to a inmate or mm-hmm. a negative one, that they decide to cast that inmate as the bad one,
mm-hmm.
and that there's no one there to sort of say that those are like kind of fallacies that the human mind does, mm-hmm. and that we need to try to keep a neutral mm-hmm. attachment to the prisoners and also take care of your own mental health, and right. and that really doesn't get addressed.
Yeah, they're not. I mean, they're going on break and drinking, like, what, car bombs or whatever. They're yeah. drinking, like, Jaeger shots and mm-hmm. beers and, like, acting like frat boys.
Exactly.
And they're not, you know, we don't really see that much from the two women. Like, McCullough, I think, is a more, she's better drawn than mm-hmm. the male characters
yeah.
Or the male, the new male guards on the show. And then that other woman with the extraction techniques,
yeah.
I think she's got, like, darker hair. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what her name is, but she's kind of, like, we just see her a little bit, and she's, like, a one-dimensional, like,
yeah.
flat character. But we don't see the two women partying. We just see them,
yeah. They kind of are annoyed with the boys. They kind of just mm-hmm. roll their eyes, but still are sort of like, oh, they're drinking on the job, whatever.
Mm-hmm. And they just kind of let it slide
mm-hmm.
because, oh, boys will be boys.
Yeah.
But it's like, what other, you know, they're wreaking havoc at the same time.
Yeah.
So, you know, and Piscatell is kind of at the head of it. And we do see a moment where Piper tries to go and appeal to his nature. She's kind of being super arrogant about it. But
oh, yeah. So that's Piper. So that's, I think really this show should be called Piper Can't Keep Her Mouth Shut. Because
ooh, I like it.
That's really like, and that's, you know, that's the advice way back in season one that Healy gives her, is like, keep your head down, read a bunch of books,
mm-hmm.
don't get involved. But she does the exact opposite. She
mm-hmm.
has to reunite with Alex. She has to sort of join Red's little mafia she kind of
mm-hmm.
has. She has to stir up problems and raise her voice with things that really she could just let slide. Because she's only there for 15 months, but she
mm-hmm.
really is dedicated to
mm-hmm.
her life in prison. Which explains why she can't keep her mouth shut when Piscatella does something immoral, which I'm all for people standing up when, you know, situations are bad, but Piper has a unique talent of making it worse.
Mm-hmm. And it's, like, just after the whole swastika thing. Like, it's been days since she's been branded.
Yeah.
Like, she's not... I'm, like, touching my arm. Like, it's,
yeah.
Like,
it's there.
Like, it's, like, traumatizing me. But, you know, it's been days since that, and she's
mm-hmm.
already, like, throwing herself back into the fray, which, you know, like you said, there is something to be said for trying to stand up for yourself when
mm-hmm.
something's going wrong. And literally at the end, she's standing up for herself because
yeah.
she ends up by trying to give Flores, you know, a cookie or granola
yeah.
bar or whatever. She ends up in the same position
yeah.
as her. And so didn't really work out so well for her in terms of her conversation with Piscatella or her, you know, or her trying to stand up for Flores.
Yeah.
But actually, so in regards to that, like, at the end where they, like, are making the prisoner stand up on the table, obviously it's not, I don't know, obviously it's not ideal, but,
mm-hmm.
like, is it better than the shoe? Like, would I rather be, like, I was thinking, I was like, would I rather be standing up on a table or in the shoe? Like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, they're, in my opinion, they're both inhumane,
mm-hmm.
but, and they both sort of have their positives and their negatives. At least, well, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought it's over when Blanca says it's over, that she
mm.
can come down when she admits that she's wrong or,
mm-hmm.
some, or something in Piscatella's mind that makes sense. So you can kind of end it when you want to. You just have
mm-hmm.
to kind of let your ego go.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, but in the shoe, you can't end it when you want it to.
Right, that's true, actually.
Which would be nice if, which I'm not sure if Piper is given that choice because a different guard makes her stand up.
And I don't even think the guards know. He doesn't even know why. Like,
yeah.
he's just kind of like, okay, go, because there's that whole dynamic of,
mm-hmm.
like, I can tell you what to do and you're going to do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And since the word is spread that the shoe is filled, it's almost like the last card they have to pull is stuff that's really not by the book because
mm-hmm.
there's nothing left to, I guess, threaten with. But at the same time, like, the fact that Blanca is, like, urinating on herself, and it's
mm-hmm.
also a place where people eat, so, like, that's
yeah.
violating a lot of human rights and health codes
mm-hmm.
right there. So I think they both are equally terrible, but the table one would only be better if you could end it by apologizing.
Yeah, or, like, something. It's a creative way to
yeah.
punish people, but it's not necessarily a super effective way because obviously,
mm-hmm.
You know, Flores isn't learning anything. She's
yeah.
just standing up there and she's basically just protesting. At this point,
yeah.
it's just a protest. And Piper, you know, we only see her up there for a couple minutes, but she's kind of like, horrified that she has to be up there, but she's but she's dealing with it. She's doing it. So, and Piper knows both of the shoe and this because you know we saw her in the shoe I think twice so far, and she kind of went a little crazy both times after like a day. So as you probably would if you were in a solitary confinement situation, but she kind of knows both, and she's kind of just like baffled that this is happening. So, and it is you know it's tough.
Well, also what's interesting, I'm going to go a little lit geek right now, is that in Jane Eyre, when she is in the very rough boarding school, that is a punishment at that school.
Is it? Oh, okay.
I don't remember what for. I think it might be for just not being good at school, like if you fail a test or something like that, that she was made to stand on a stool in front of the class for the rest of the day, and that was very traumatizing. She was like 11, so it was very traumatizing, but it kind of shows almost how old school the idea of this type of punishment is, because that book is from the 1800s, so Fiscatella is kind of thinking that way. It's clearly he's not a innovator.
No.
He is, you know, an authority who really doesn't, you know, doesn't really care about the consequences as long as there's order.
Yeah, that's so funny. I read Jane Eyre such a long time ago, but I don't remember that part. But that's, I mean, that's a good example. And, I mean, the other example that I think Piper makes to Fiscatella is, she says something, it's like being like the same as being in the stocks, like which is an even older form of punishment, and it's, you know, it's like such a like a public shaming, but at the same time, like, the guards don't really realize that it's also giving them power because they're openly protesting by continuing the punishment. So it's kind of, it's like an interesting dynamic going on there right now. But within, you know, Piper's group of friends, there's, you know, also the Nikki situation where she's been back for a couple episodes, but we've kind of seen her sliding and sliding, and you know, it's obviously been established that she's relapsed, and Red is trying to kind of scramble around and embargo things for her, and you know, make sure that no one sells to her, and so it's just it's just kind of like her own prison, like. You know, and the guards are, like, the big guard with the red hair, the beard, who, like, cooks his own noodles. He, you know, he's selling to the, like Red said, like, we didn't even know that. Red knew it. Well, because Red knows everything. But we didn't really know that. And Red, you know, says, I see you take it from one person and sell it to another and blah, blah, blah. And he gets mad at her. And then he's like, wait, are you interested in buying? And she's like, no, no, no. I just want you to, like, not sell to Nikki. So the corrupt system kind of helps people continue to engage in these behaviors that are really, like, negative and maladaptive.
Yeah, well, Nikki is probably the most frustrated and loved character because I really like her. Like, she's funny, and she's also sometimes the voice of reason, because some of the other prisoners go off on these tangents, and she's the one that's like, yeah, right, that's going to happen. So she's really, I want to root for her, but at the same time, I feel like she's just gonna let me down, she's gonna let Red down, she's gonna let all the other audience members down. But I do see what you're saying with it being a prison. I think a drug addiction is a prison regardless of if you're actually in prison or not, and how easy it is to get it in either location, inside or out, is something that I totally get, and that's why she says she's been intentionally clean 7 times and has relapsed every time, but she keeps somewhat trying.
And I do like the conversation that she has with Piper at one point, where Piper's kind of like, oh, we need to address this whole, like, smoking the crack thing, and like, I was enabling you, and Nikki's kind of like, and Nikki's very sharp too, like a lot of addicts are incredibly, like, emotionally sharp, just like, you know, the addiction doesn't discriminate, so you know, obviously there's all sorts of different people, but Nikki specifically is very, she's a very sharp person, she's been to therapy, she's also very treatment savvy, so she knows, like, she can read other people, and she's like, well, are you saying that because you're concerned about me, or because you want to absolve your own guilt? And Piper's like, a little bit of both. And but Piper and Alex did enable her, because they did. She was like, I want company, like, I want to you know, a lot of times when people are go through relapse and are addicted, they want to take other people with them. And so, although Alex and Piper just had their one, because sometimes people can just smoke crack once, I guess, and be cool with it. And so they have that conversation. And then later, you know, Piper's concerned about her, whether or not it's part of her guilt or not. I think it's a little bit of both. Like, Piper admitted herself, but Red is also really concerned too, and it's just kind of just heartbreaking to watch her kind of scramble and try to, you know, try to fix Nikki from the outside.
Exactly. And when she tries to convince Red that she's finished for good this time, I totally did not believe it.
I know.
She was just like, oh yeah, manual labor. I'm like, no one going through withdrawals is like, yes, manual labor.
I know. Yeah.
And so I was like, nope, I am not believing her for one second. And then there's the issue with Loop Check, or I don't know if I say that right. He's one of the hard names on the show. Like, he's, like, the worst for her. Those two should ever be put, like, in the same room together. They just, you know, he wants to do right by her, but at the same time, he, you know, gives her weed. So it goes back and forth. And then he ratted her out, and that's why she was in Mac. So it's sort of, he wants to do good, but then when it comes down to it, he just is like, nah, do whatever you want.
Yeah, and their relationship is so, I mean, because he's kind of just, like, do whatever you want.
Yeah,
like, his
always.
Life, too. Like, he's just, and he's so, it's sad, because he is in love with her, which is just kind of funny. Like, you know, and it says a lot about him. He's choosing someone who's inaccessible. Like, like Nikki even says, she's like, how screwed up are you that you're choosing, like, a lesbian junkie, you know, as someone to, like, have your affections on. But you know, the relationship between the two of them is definitely, you know, it's definitely not healthy.
Yeah.
And he does. He gives her the weed at the end, which is definitely, like, it's, like, nothing compared to what she wants. And I think Alex even said maybe in the last episode she was just kind of like, crack is, like, nothing to Nikki because she wants... Although I would argue crack is, just in my experience from being a counselor, crack will take you down way faster than heroin will.
Yeah.
But... You know, I if your substance of choice is heroin, that's what, and especially if you're dependent, like Nikki is at this point in time, like she's gonna, you know, if she doesn't have the heroin, she's gonna fall and fall hard and fast.
Yeah.
So yeah, and like you said, you know, she's such a loved character, and she's so like she inspires a lot of love just because she's so quick and she's so friendly and welcoming to people, and it's hard to watch people relapse. So we kind of feel a little bit like Red too, like you know, like we want to protect her.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you know, it's at the end we kind of see her. She smokes some weed and she's kind of really out of it towards the end. She's really frustrated. She's really, you know, not doing well. And she comes to movie night, and movie night is where a lot of things come to a head in this episode. We see, we're not really going to talk about it too much, but we see Crazy Eyes and Cucudio, or Suzanne and Cucudio, kind of like getting it on in the closet and whatever, and that'll become more important next week. But we also see her engage with Lolly for a second, which is actually pretty cute.
Oh, I love that, actually.
Yeah.
It was really cute. The wax paper recommendation. I thought it also, it kind of, I mean, they both clearly have some mental health problems going on, but the fact that they were kind of like, they were so sweet to each other in that little exchange, it kind of really showed their true characters. I mean, it was only like three sentences back and forth, but I just liked that they both were like, oh, good idea. And
they both like treated each other like equals.
Yeah.
Like I mean, of course they both have like some issues, and they're both like obviously not totally on like the same wavelength as everyone else, you know. They're both kind of thinking that the time machine can potentially be real, which don't we all wish that there was a real time machine? But they're treating each other as equals, and they're just having a conversation instead of judging each other. They're both kind of coming to each other with like this quote unquote information that they know, and I liked that a lot too. Crazy Eyes has it, and then she's got a lot of little cute moments in this episode.
Yeah.
She also, I like her relationship with Morello, because Morello is also kind of a little unstable. She's actually has a lot of the same like relationship issues as Suzanne does, I think, like with like being obsessed with a person. And so that relationship's always been interesting to me too. But anyway, but at movie night, you know, Suzanne and Cucudio are in the closet, and which is kind of funny. But and then also, you know, Tasty ill-advised Joe's The Wiz as the movie. I have never seen The Wiz. Have you seen The Wiz?
I've seen bits and pieces of it. But I've never seen the full thing all the way through. I only remember that really the scene where they're going down the yellow brick road and Michael Jackson's the Scarecrow. I don't remember too much about it, but when The Wiz is brought up in Caputo's office, the first thing I think is this is going to end badly because of the presence of the white supremacists in the group. And I think because it's a African-American take on a white story is part of the issue. I think it, if it was uniquely an African-American story, such as like The Color Purple or something, that would have shot down some of their comments, such as like, you're stealing from us, or we don't care about someone in Harlem, which then why would you care about someone in Kansas? I mean,
yeah, and Brooke kind of shoots that down. She's like, I'm Minnesota, Michigan, like, people are not, no one's from Kansas. Like, and really, like, I mean, I've never, like I said, I haven't seen The Wiz, but I, the girls kind of talk about it, Tasty's friends and Brooke and Judy King talk about it, and they're basically saying that the movie's not good. I don't know. I have no idea. But, you know, we talk a lot about, at the end of every episode, we've been kind of talking about, like, pop culture moments. And this is, like, a big one because, you know, The Wiz is definitely divides the group, and it's such a, it's just... And on top of that, the fact that, you know, it's like you said, an African-American take on a quote-unquote white story, it's also, like, not necessarily an engaging movie. So, like, no one's being like, oh, this is a great movie, like, so excited to watch this movie. So it's definitely, it definitely causes a lot of rifts during that and escalates the race war.
Definitely. Well, I think... Also, they talk about all the rom-coms that were showed before, so, like, are they really, like, what do they have to base this off of? I mean, I'm sure compared to, like, seeing the same rom-com plot 11 times in a row, you might want a musical, even if it's not the best musical. At least it's a little variety.
A little variety. Although I do know people who could watch, like, Notting Hill, like, 1,000 times.
Too much, you grant.
No. Yes. but yeah, I mean, who knows? Like, The Wiz is your favorite movie, I guess, or if you want to. And most everyone else seemed pretty happy with it. It was just the white supremacist girls who were, you know, being kind of bitches about it. And so there's that. And then, you know, aside from the escalating race war and everything going on inside the prison, Alita gets out, and Alita is, you know, a big part of this episode. And instead of, it's kind of funny because I was, like, a huge fan of Lost back in the day, and it's kind of funny because instead of, like, flashbacks, it feels kind of like a flash forward, but it's not really. But it, like, feels like, oh, we're seeing someone, like, actually get out and go about their life outside of the prison. And it's funny because you wouldn't really. I mean, we were prepped for it throughout the season, but, like, you wouldn't really expect it to be Alita, but we follow Alita outside of the prison, and she, it's really emotional, because she leaves Daya behind.
Oh, yeah.
And Daya's kind of like, I felt like as I was watching it, kind of like all the scenes with Daya and Gloria and Maria, like the three of them, was kind of like an after-school special. Like, it was kind of like a cautionary tale. Daya's like, gee whiz, I'll come hang out with you and your drug, like, whatever. And then Gloria's like, Daya, no. And it's just, it was just funny that way. But yeah, Daya, it's definitely kind of concerning that she's falling in with Maria. Even though, like, I still like Maria.
I still like Maria, too.
Yeah.
It's hard to... break that, but I kind of, the only criticism I have of that is that I feel like Daya went hard fast without her mom around. I mean, it went from, like, you know, she was gone, and then she was, you know, like, back-talking Gloria, and then she's hanging out with the newly formed Mexican drug smuggling ring, or they're not, they're Dominican drug smuggling ring. So... I found that a little bit unbelievable that, like, as soon as your mom's good, like, boom, you're bad, and that just is, I thought, but there's only so many episodes you can do, so I just, I gave it the benefit of the doubt, but the most annoying part of her release is the story that the guard tells her.
Oh, yeah.
She's being released. I was like, that is the world's most insensitive thing to say that, like, oh, we released someone, a Hispanic lady just like you, and she was picked up for prostitution and ended up in jail that same night. I'm like, why would you tell
someone? I love Gloria's like, isn't there another story you can tell her right now?
I was like, why the fact? And she was like laughing and enjoying telling the story.
I think McCullough, like, I just from this episode, because she does get a little bit of screen time with the guard at the beginning, well, at the very beginning, she's letting Alita, you know, releasing Alita, and then she talks to the other guard about. The issue with Ramos and the throwing up and stuff. So, you know, like I said, as for the pool of new guard, she's definitely like the most human of mm-hmm. all of them, or the most, you know, complex of all of them. But I think at that point she's just kind of like nervous. Like, I've said stupid things when I've been nervous before, but it is like an incredibly insensitive thing to say. And it definitely like kind of made me miss, I can't even remember her name, but she was played by Lauren Lapkus a couple seasons ago. She was like the young white guard, and she was
she was so bubbly
and she was always like so nice, and she was always so careful with what she was saying to people, and like she wasn't, you know, she was like, although she was someone that they were like, you know, potentially taking advantage of too, so that's like the flip side of that coin. But yeah, I just feel like they're releasing her, and then although they did get her the picture after they released her, so that was
nice. Was one nice thing. I think I think that she did that to kind of make up for the terrible story.
Maybe
that she just
maybe
because that. I mean, I just can't imagine. That's probably one of the most awkward scenes, probably this season.
Yeah, it was definitely, and it's so funny to see Gloria and Alita, who are two like such strong like independent women, or mm-hmm. or, you know, very strong-minded women, and they're just kind of like treating her like an idiot. They're just like, okay, we understand like what's happening, well, we don't really understand, but like, okay, we get what you're trying to say, but like, why, like, and this is dumb and shut up. And they kind of just shut her down, which is good, because the two of those women can shut people down like no other, which is good. But they don't really want to ruin it for Alita either, so they're kind of just back off a little bit. But yeah, and so once Alita gets out, she's, you know, she's trying to reestablish her life, and she's not really expecting to have to, you know, do what she told the prison she was going to do, because she has all this money socked away, literally socked away in a sock at her cousin's house, and her cousin has taken all of it, plus her clothes, and it's just, you know, it makes things much harder for her.
Yeah, I'm kind of baffled by the relationship she has with Margarita, because she's mad at him for having a baby with Caesar, and then she's mad at her for not staying with Caesar. And I was like, wait, I don't think you can be mad about both things at once.
Yeah, she's just like upset about losing, because she took the fall for Caesar, and so she thought he was going to be out there, help her when she came back out. And you know, a lot of times, just from my career as a substance abuse counselor, you know, you do see people come out of jail, and then they do, like, for Alita, it's only been a day. We've seen her for literally, like, 24 hours, or maybe even less than 24 hours. But she comes out, and she's trying to do the right thing. She had this money saved up, and she wants to start, maybe she had enough to start a nail salon. Who knows?
Yeah,
knows how much she had in that sock? And so she has this money. It's drug money, so obviously she couldn't put it in a bank, because people might be like, oh, well, that was dumb. But, like, you can't put it in a bank.
That would happen. So I don't really think that's dumb, but I don't know, maybe if she was leaving it with someone who wasn't like hawking goods with a little person who
works at a bodega. Yeah, I think that kind of like transpired when she was gone. Because she's basically like, what is this? And then the girl has VCRs, and like, even if this is like 2012 or whenever the show started, like, VCRs were still like way out.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no reason for anyone to have a VCR anymore. And I think at one point she's like, oh, this whole planned obsolescence thing, and Alita's like, you're not even making any sense. Like, what are you talking about? And so, you know, and a lot of people come out to a situation, even if they don't have like money socked away, like they've trusted people to you know, help take care of their kids, or help you know, keep up their, you know, housing, or you know, have their possessions for them, and not necessarily because of any malice or anything, but like, maybe her cousin really did need the money, and there was like these funds that she could access, and a lot of times when you're, you know, living with less than, or living where you're, you know, not necessarily, you know, have prosperity, then you're gonna take that and take advantage of it. And Alita, unfortunately, that was what happened to her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the cousin still says she'll pay it back, so maybe that might happen one day.
Yeah.
But I didn't like that Marguerite already made up the couch for her, which is like, even though they kind of like bite each other's head off from time to time, they still are kind of there for the kind of family, semi-family, and that at least she has someone, which was good to see.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's, you know, she's kind of doing, Marguerite is her name? I didn't even know her.
Yeah, it's Marguerite.
Yeah, Marguerite. Mm-hmm. She's she's trying to do the right thing. Like, she's mm-hmm. with some guy. I mean, who knows what whose guy is she's with. Who knows? But you know, she's like, I have to do right by my child. And, like, she's not, you know, so she's kind of clueless, too. Like, she brings Alita to the diner at the beginning, and she's mm-hmm. just kind of like, oh, you all shower together? And, like, she has friends in prison. Like, what is she talking about? Like, doesn't she talk to these other friends she has in prison? But she's kind of clueless, and Alita's just kind of like a deer in the headlights, and Margarita doesn't really understand what's going on with her. I kind of thought about the, I don't know if you've ever seen The Shawshank Redemption, but like Brooks, mm-hmm. when one of the prisoners, he's been in prison far longer than Alita has, I would assume, because he's very old in the movie, but he gets released, and the world is like new, like there are cars, like, because it took place like a long time mm-hmm. ago, and you should really see, Shawshank's awesome.
Yeah.
but yeah, he comes out, and he can't really like deal with life outside of prison. Mm-hmm. So I won't like ruin what happens to him, but he's just like very kind of just, it's a whole new environment. Like I was thinking, I was like, have I ever, like, there's nothing I could really compare it to, but like even if you go to like another like state or another country for a little while and you come back, it's like things are kind of new again, mm-hmm. or things. And so I can't even imagine going away for years, because Alita's been in prison for a while, I think, and coming out and then having to kind of deal with, like, you know, someone offering her coffee,
mm-hmm.
and no one's offering you coffee in jail. No one's coming to serve you food. Like, she was the one serving food in jail. And then she comes out and someone's like, oh, do you want coffee? And she doesn't really get
what to do. Yeah.
What, I mean, she does, she's just so, like, kind of, like I said,
she's
like a deer in headlights.
Yeah.
And she doesn't really know. She feels like there's, like, a mark on her because mm-hmm. kind of, like, because of what the guards are doing. The guards mm-hmm. are, like, treating them like less than. Mm-hmm. And so you come out and you look at other people looking at you and you're like, oh, you're judging, you know, judging me.
Well, I kind of felt like there was, like, a mixture of maybe PTSD going on and mm-hmm. and some internalized, I guess prison stigma that she has maybe felt with the, you know, feeling like I'm, you know, she says, I feel like I have a mark on me.
Mm-hmm.
But she also, like, the way she's looking at the other diners and they're, like, laughing and smiling, and it seems like she's interpreting that as sort of a negative thing, that they're looking at her or they're going to do something about her. But that could be PTSD or just the natural effects of being in prison for that long.
Right, right. Yeah, and I mean, she, so, you know, she's kind of just trying to deal, you know, the first day she buys that hot little dress, and she's trying to, like, make herself feel normal again.
Yeah.
And she spends all her money really quickly because mm-hmm. she's expecting this other money, and she's just, you know, like I said, trying to make herself feel normal, and she goes to her cousin. Her cousin doesn't have the money, and her cousin offers her. She's like, I could hook you up with, like, the midget guy or whatever.
Yeah.
And Alita's like, no, but, you know, if you've had easy money your whole life mm-hmm. and you don't really have any skills and you don't really have any funds and you don't really have a ton of support, like, what else are you supposed to do?
Exactly. I feel like the cards are really stacked against her and the other inmates that will hopefully eventually be released. But, you know, there was a GRE or program where you could get your high school diploma, and then I think that stopped, and there's
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of these other programs were being taken away, and then they're not really given other than that one, like, career day where they gave them mm-hmm. clothes and interview skills. There really isn't any help or practice for when you have to go outside and provide for yourself, and mm-hmm. and she's kind of stuck in a, you know, really bad situation with having really no money and no skills, no education.
Mm-hmm. And Alita didn't even participate in career day, I don't think.
I don't think she did.
So, I mean, not that that really... I mean, it did help a little bit. You know, they learned how to interview and write a resume. And Tasty learned a couple things. And actually, she... Mm-hmm. Well, she thinks that she got the job with Caputo because of career day, but it really wasn't. It was just because Caputo is weird. But Alita, you know, I do have some hope for Alita, but I do hope, you know, a lot... Like, I'm kind of repeating myself, but a lot of people, when you have easy money, when there's, like, easy money mm-hmm. and it's so, so hard to get a job, like, in a legal way outside mm-hmm. of prison, you know, once you're a felon or once you have a record, it's yeah. makes it exponentially more difficult to get a job. Like, exactly. it's hard enough to get a job without a record, mm-hmm. and then you have a record, and in addition to that, no job skills except for maybe one career fair that you got yeah. when you were inside. You know, no training with the GRE, no really connection to family either. Like, she hasn't had any sort of Di has been in there, but yeah. like, she really hasn't had any connection with her cousins or anything like that. So, you know, like she says, right before she gets right after she gets released, she was like, in there I have people and out here I have nothing.
Exactly.
And it's so sad because that's the reality for a mm-hmm. lot of people.
Yeah, that's really sad. She also, I don't believe she knows where her children are either, which is really mm-hmm. sad. I know they're yeah. in foster care, but the fact that she doesn't know, like, what city they could be in or yeah. anything is, you know, or if they're even all together, which I mm-hmm. assume, unfortunately, they're probably not all together. I think would be really hard, even though she's not really winning any points for mother skills, mm-hmm. as was seen by that Mother's Day episode mm-hmm. that, a while back. But at least the idea that she isn't no one to really, she doesn't know where her family is outside of the prison.
Mm-hmm. But she's, you know, and she says, like, before she leaves, she's like, I'm gonna go find all my kids and da da da. And that's not this is just still the first day, I guess. Like, the next day, her mm-hmm. intention was to go find her kids. But she's, like, so defeated by the end of the first day. She's sitting on the couch with that baby. And, yeah. and you know, she's living on a couch. You yeah. know, she's... she does have it better than Tasty, though, from the first season. When Tasty got out, Tasty had to, like, sleep in the corner on, like, a yoga mat or something.
Yeah, there was, like, nine other people in the house or something. Yeah, it was just not a good situation.
So she does have it a little better. And the girl that she's staying with seems to have, you know, obviously money from Cesar or maybe her new boyfriend something. Yeah. So she's buying a whole heap of clothes. So, you know, obviously she's got money to burn. And so she's in a place where she's, like, you know, she has her basic needs met.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she, you know, she's got a lot of way to go, especially if she wants to get those kids back. Because DCF, mm-hmm. rightly, so it's hard once you get out of prison with a, you know, felony on your record or with anything on your record to mm-hmm. get a job. But it's also hard to get your kids back.
Yeah.
But, like, that's, like, I think it should be, you know, in some cases, DCF sometimes makes it harder than it should be. But in some cases, you should have to prove that you are able to take care of your children.
Definitely.
And it does DCF, I think it's called DCYF in New York City. It's called different things in different states, but it should be hard to get your kids back.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You should have to prove, kids are a huge, five kids, that's a huge responsibility.
Exactly.
And, you know, Alita thinks, she thinks things are going to be simple because things have always been simple for her.
Mm-hmm.
And, or they've, money has always been simple for her.
Yeah.
And that's been, you know, even though she's been engaging in things that have been illegal, it's mm-hmm. been simple for her to kind of, you know, go to Cesar and get, he was this drug kingpin, and, you know, work for him and get money and, mm-hmm. and keep her kids and do what she needed to do. But now things are hard. She's on her own.
Mm-hmm. And it's, like, I fear that she will end up back inside, like mm-hmm. what happened to Tasty, that she ended up back within not too long. Mm-hmm. I think it was like a week or something. So
yeah.
I'm afraid she'll end up back there, or that she will have to turn back to a life of crime, which I want her to, like, have a career as a nail salon owner.
Yeah,
like she talks
I would
about.
Go to her nail salon.
Like, I would, and also I think she'd be a great businesswoman because she does not take any crap from anyone. So I think she actually has some of the, like, maybe interpersonal skills to, like, be really good at business, but she just has all these other things working mm-hmm. against her. But yeah, I would definitely go to Lita's nails.
Yeah, I do too. Her nails were so cool. The blue ones with, like, the tips or whatever mm-hmm. that she had were really, I like those a lot.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Judy King liked her because Judy King likes straight shooters, I think.
Yeah.
And so she liked her too. And Alita, like you said, she doesn't take any crap.
Yeah.
And she's, so I think that if she doesn't get too defeated, like, she's been defeated, we've seen her, and we've seen Gloria build her back up several times within prison.
Mm-hmm.
And Gloria is, like, her support, and Gloria's gone, and Daya too, and they're both gone.
Mm-hmm.
And Gloria, you know, kind of gave her, she was like, you got this, it's not going to be easy, but, like, you got it. Like, you're, I think she even tells her, like, you know, you're Puerto Rican, you have people, like, you have, you know, and she's, I think at one point she basically tells her, like, you're tough, like, you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we all need friends like Gloria
exactly.
in our lives, but I think that if Alita doesn't get, like, too defeated about it,
mm-hmm.
she would thrive. And
exactly.
I think that if, you know, prisons provided more programs for people
mm-hmm.
to transition to the outside, then, you know, then people like that would be able to thrive a little bit more.
Definitely.
And hopefully that's what's going to go on in the future. Mm-hmm. But besides that, we already kind of talked a little bit about the pop culture references in the episode. And we have hope for Alita in the future. Mm-hmm. And did you think we covered everything?
I think so, yeah.
I think we did. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. And
check out, what's the website?
It is rtor.org, Resources mm-hmm. to Recover.
Awesome. So, and if you want to check us out, we're on Twitter at You've Got Time Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/ You've Got Time Podcast, and you can reach us via email. Someone should email me because no one has emailed me yet. I need an email. at You've Got Time Podcast @gmail.com. So thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.